Hello, welcome to the Radio Academy podcast. I'm Laura Rawlings. We're doing something a little bit different in the podcast today. And if you're keen to find out more about speech broadcasting, working on topical and news programmes, interviewing techniques, and how to bring listeners into your programme, this is definitely for you. To mark International Women's Day, we're sharing Emma Barnett's conversation with Magic Breakfast presenter Harriet Scott. This was recorded at the Radio Academy Festival last year, which is our annual conference and the biggest gathering of radio and audio folk in the UK. Now, Emma's presented on 5 Live, on LBC and Radio 4, and she's best known for her role on Woman's Hour, the programme where it is International Women's Day every day and has been for more than 75 years. In fact, I read the late Queen described it as a friend, guide and advocate to women everywhere. Emma is a three-time ARIA Gold winner, which is incredible, including Best Speech Presenter in 2022. And just to add, the shortlist for this year's nominations comes out on the 30th of March, so make a note. Usually, what goes on at the festival stays at the festival, so to speak. It certainly stays among the members, but we wanted to give you a taster of what you get as a Radio Academy member, so this one is on us. And it begins with Emma in action. It's an extract from an exclusive interview that she secured with Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe, telling her story for the first time.
The power of that support and that love, it obviously means a lot. I did also think that when it was described, I believe by Tulip Street, your local MP, that Richard had set the standard for husbands everywhere with his campaign, that you That's were not true. Possibly aware of how big it really was. Is there anything you wanted to say to him or about him? Because it's, you know, especially very recently, that hunger strike that he did outside the Foreign Office, people were really worried about him as well.
I think our story was a story of love, more than anything else. I've got so much respect for him. I've got so much gratitude, and I think I would never be able to thank him enough. But also it makes me think, do I deserve all that? And I hope I do. It has been an amazing journey for both of us. If anything, our love has gone a lot deeper. We have gained so much, we have lost a lot more. But the mind of human being works in a way that you thankfully gradually forget the bad things and you remember the good things. So I would like to hold on to the idea that my love has got a lot deeper than before.
The whole world was waiting to hear her speak.
Yes.
That's a lot of, I don't know, responsibility as a broadcaster. How did you prepare for meeting her?
I mean, it was three interviews in one, really. You've got a personal story, you've got a political story, and you've got essentially a foreign affairs story as well, and how we relate to the world that we're in. So I prepared, like I often do, a few versions of the same thing, depending on how it goes. And you also are with Nazanin, who I've got to know pretty well, and Richard, her husband, over the last near 6 years, you are talking to somebody who's been through a heck of a lot, nearly 6 years, you know, detained from her family, and for some of that, in very, very difficult circumstances. So you also have a duty of care.
Yeah.
But you're right, people wanted to hear her story. So the art of that particular interview and that particular exchange is about making that space for that person, but not shying away from what I know she needed to say.
We had a brief chat before we came on about that most of the stuff you do is live,
yes.
But that sometimes, like with that interview, for example, you know, it was pre-recorded, as you say, because there were considerations, not least legal considerations as well.
Yes, I mean, the perfect situation with an interview, I mean, I'm very aware we've got lots of different sort of people at different stages of their careers and what they might be interested in hearing me talk about, but the perfect thing for me is always if we get something we've never heard before,
yeah.
Or in journalistic terms, a news line. And one of the most important news lines or things we never knew, because we'd never heard from Nazanin, is that she alleged that she had been forced to sign a false confession upon leaving Iran, despite what had gone on with negotiations. And you have to check that that is how she has said. You have to get a statement from the Foreign Office. So the journalistic side of it has to be done. You can't always know that. So when you're live on air and somebody said something, we've still got 40 minutes left to go, we'll have to try and sort it while we're on air. There was also a much longer radio version of that interview and a television version. So there were some other logistics. But as I say, I think sometimes a live environment's very odd for people who haven't been through what she's been through as well. So we have to try and weigh up all the different things.
Going back to the moment when you won Best Speech Presenter at the ARIAs this year, what do you think helped get you there this time?
I'm laughing because I've since revealed that I had been through a medical procedure about 8 hours earlier. So I was actually on quite a lot of drugs, which was maybe different drugs to other people, but I don't know. So I just thought, right, OK, I've got to get on stage and get off stage. And I genuinely am unaware of what I said on that stage because I have been very open about my IVF experiences and I had had my egg retrieval that day and I was not going to miss the ARIAs because a lot of your life when you're doing fertility treatment is controlled by a medical schedule that is unrelenting. I was even more thrilled to win because it was a new job with a new team and we had all worked exceptionally hard on it, but I was also happy I stayed upright. So there were two things going on there. And I, your question about to get to that point, I mean, I think no matter how small the interview is, I'm always trying, I mean, small in size, you know, minutes, as well as perhaps you might not know the person or it's a bit quirky item. I'm always trying to find a bit of an edge or a bit of something that you can take away from the programme and maybe have to talk about afterwards or just put in your mind.
I also mentioned to you, because just meeting you probably for the first time this morning, you come across as just fearless and fabulously brave. And you've done some incredible jobs previously, but when you take on the juggernaut that is Woman's Hour and your predecessors, you know, you don't take them on, but you're taking on that you've had many...
Welcome them all to the programme. It'd be quite a show, wouldn't it?
Did you find that a hell of a responsibility? Did you ever consider saying no to it?
No. I think it's something that you... though, because it's such a big part of the Radio 4 and the podcast landscape now, you want to do it well. You know, you want to do it the way that you think could work. And I think putting the listeners at the heart of it, it's now a full hour, and having a relentless focus on exclusivity is a very big part of what I hope to continue to bring.
Which brings us nicely onto Kate Bush.
There was Kate Bush.
I mean, there's Kate Bush.
There was Kate
Bush. She doesn't speak to anybody.
She was there.
She doesn't speak
phone.
To anybody.
She's hello, Emma, it's Kate. I said, oh, hello.
Was that exciting to speak to her?
It was. Sometimes things align, but I have, you know, I don't know. Do other people have this? I'm sure many, we've got producers in the room. I have a list on my phone of people that I want to have on the programme or any programme, and it's constantly... I'm putting yeses and nos, I'm putting maybes, I'm putting the next thing, and she would be on what I would call my longest bid list.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely thrilling to be able to talk to her, in some ways about almost just hearing what Kate Bush did during lockdown, which is part of what came up. You want to know, I certainly wanted to know. It was lovely to just hear her on the phone.
Who is the top of your list right now?
Well, I'm not telling you the very top, because I don't want to say. For others, I think we need to get J.K. Rowling on Woman's Hour.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot that she has said, but there's not a lot she said in conversation or in dialogue or in interview. That Twitter and other social media platforms give us a great platform, and yes, you do reply, but you're not in an exchange or an interview. So she would be one.
Yeah.
I have tried for quite a while to get Monica Lewinsky on many programmes that I've worked on. I still think there are... there's more to say almost now with some of the way the climate has developed.
God, it would be different.
Yeah, and you know, very rightly, she's very wary of the media. That there are about 27 others on that list at the moment, I think, if I'm to be precise. But I won't go through all of them.
You cover a lot of things on the show. Some of the, obviously, a lot of the more hard-hitting topical stories. You also talked about gossip recently. I enjoyed that
was programme. A gossip programme.
And the need for it in our lives. And that when women do it, it's seen as a bad thing, but everybody does it. But also... like, in yourself, like, I'll go back to your, I think, fearlessness. And when you start a new show like Woman's Hour, there's going to be long-time listeners who might, I don't know, tweet something negative, not necessarily about you personally, about the way you've handled something. How do you react to any sort of negative comments or publicity?
Well, I always try and make sure that the person who is reacting has listened to the programme.
Well, yeah, it's a start.
No, but it's actually a bit of an issue, and I think it's, I hope, perhaps good advice to broadcasters who are coming up is that...
it's very obvious when someone hasn't listened. Mm. And I think that's the very least you can do. I listen to what my guests have to say, and I meet a lot of people who come and talk to me in the street, and a lot of people come up to you and are very honest. I do think it's quite fun sometimes watching my husband say, oh, we're onto the patriarchy, it's not 8 a.m, we haven't had a coffee yet, or they'll ask me about a particular political policy. I engage with what I believe to be fair responses, and I try to learn and properly read them, or I handwrite 2 letters a week. I try and sometimes do a little bit more, because some of our listeners still write. Mm-hmm. I actually do love correspondence.
And you write back to them?
Yes, I do write back. And, you know, there's a few who are quite regular. There's one, I think it's a gentleman who sends me quite a lot of books, some of his books, and also CDs now. I try and be in some dialogue of some description, but I do think there's diminishing returns, especially on Twitter.
Any particular highlights since taking on the helm at Woman's Hour?
Well, I mean, very recently you've mentioned, we were just saying when you come off air, you know, you almost can't quite remember what just happened on that particular show, but then you'll go back and think. Creating a space that is trusted, I mean, the Nazanin story is a very good example, because the day that she was released, we also had Liz Truss on, you may have heard of her, the Foreign Secretary, and that was an accountability interview, through to something like Kate Bush, which is about people finding her again, through to Lady Lavinia Norse, who was cleared of child sex abuse charges and hadn't spoken to anyone else. She had done a print interview. I believe that radio audio is very, very different because you are in your own words. So highlight perhaps is not the right word for some. It's just more what you can do with the space and the real estate of a daily programme with that sort of reach, you know, in terms of the downloads of the programme and the amount of people it's reaching.
Well, this is the theme of the festival, isn't it? It's the power of audio, and that's exactly what you're talking about. And Women's Hour is the most downloaded podcast on the
BBC. Yeah, we did reach that.
Congratulations.
And that is great. But I would also say in a podcast landscape, you know, lots of things are set up to be friendly and have conversations, and I think conversation is a word that's... But I do think there's a difference between a conversation and an interview. Mm. And I very much interview people. And I think... I don't make enemies, but I'm not going into this to make friends with everybody who comes onto our programme. I'm there to respect them and go through their story and properly, hopefully, go through their story. And that is a difference between a lot of podcasts, not all, and with what we're also doing sometimes that's different, perhaps as journalists.
Have you found anything to be particularly challenging that maybe you didn't expect it to be challenging? Like, you might have your high-profile interviews, you think, right, OK, I need to focus, but there may have been things that actually were surprisingly challenging.
Well, I think also in the time that we're living in, we've weirdly gone to kind of a monoculture in some ways. Even you can see it in our politics, through to what then trends and is the most talked about things. I think people still want things that surprise them and still don't, you know, it, a tendency to all gather around the same thing in the same way, to try to keep breaking that and finding different ways of doing it. I think people want to be entertained as well as everything else that's going on, and finding a way of doing that interspersed with trickier things is a talent, and to keep doing that every single day. Just on a technical note, you know, a 10 a.m. slot, I did it for nearly six years on Five Live, is still the shortest amount of time to set up a programme in the morning, because we do not have an overnight team. I'm not saying we should, I'm just saying we don't. And the other big change with Woman's Hour was that we got rid of all of the planned items. So there are still planned items, but there is always a massive hole in the programme.
Up
on
until
the day.
What point, yeah.
Up until what point? 9:49.
Yeah. Is that stressful?
I'm very used to it. I'm sure, yes. By normal people's standards, it probably would be
but
quite stressful.
But you choose to work that way.
Well, we choose as a team.
Yeah. So tell me about the team.
Well, the team has an editor, it has a deputy, and then it has the producers and an on-the-day team. And that was rejigged with a view to... Woman's Hour isn't a news programme. It's newsy. It has news lines running through it. But it also... What is going on in the air that day? And women don't only care about certain subjects. There's the whole world is our oyster. How we tap into that can't be done if you don't have the space to do that and reflect that. And it always had very current affairs and all those sorts of things, but that is a key difference if you listen to the programme that you can hear.
So when you go live, is there still a gap? And how do you feel about that?
There was a lot of gaps on Five Live, let me tell you.
I can play songs, and that's a lot easier. Well,
but I did a 3-hour show, and that was designed like that you would roll and not know. Yeah. I remember one time quite recently when Atomic Kitten burst back into the charts around the football, and somebody just went in my ear, the last 5 minutes now, Atomic Kitten, we've got two of them, two of the singers. And I went, great, we've got Atomic Kitten. I don't know what was meant to be there, but now we have Atomic Kitten. So there's a fluidity that I'm exceptionally comfortable with, and the team are very comfortable with now with me. So I'm keen.
Let's talk about the role of the listener then.
Yes.
And talk about fluidity and their engagement in the show. I know that's important to you from listening to Women's Hour. I can hear it's important to you. What level of engagement do you enjoy, and how much airtime do you want to give your listener?
I think it's exceptionally important to not pay lip service to, we want to hear from you, and then you don't read any messages. You don't take any calls. You do, like, there's nothing.
Yes.
I don't mean that programmes who then don't read anything aren't using their listeners, because the inbox is a gold mine and you might then use them in the next programme. I'm not saying that, but I think if you set it up at the beginning, you do have to actually follow through on that.
Yeah.
Listeners have got me out of all sorts of holes. Listeners have come up with better questions than me and anyone working on the team. They've come up with something, sometimes if it is a political one, where they live and the MP is in their constituency, and I can get exceptionally specific about a service provision there.
Yes.
And I think also it's the biggest privilege to have a text message console there, because I think, you know, Twitter can go into echo chambers, just to see the length and breadth of the country, sometimes from abroad, if we get the emails in time, to see that the view you may have thought was prevailing is not. So I am dedicated to sort of trying to intersperse that.
Also, you must get a lot of communication from listeners about your own personal stories. You've been very open about your own journey with IVF.
Yeah, sorry, maybe too open with the Aria moment, but yes, there we go.
Also, you've written a book on periods.
I did,
so,
guilty.
I imagine that brings you closer to the listener. I think people then, they get to know you. They know your deepest, darkest secrets.
They don't need to know it all the time, but they do need to know. I did just get back from holiday, and you know when you think, how am I going to say hello again? I think sometimes, especially on radio, because there is a bit of formality with it all, and it can be, you know, also on Radio 4, people almost pretend they haven't been away. They sort of just say hello again.
Yes.
So I like to say, hello, I've been away, I'm back, or whatever. Yeah. Not make a big thing of it. And I just
did
said,
you miss me?
Yeah, exactly. And I just said at the beginning of this, coming back from summer holiday, I've only got one word about that, chafe. Maybe another word, thighs. And then we moved on. And then I cannot tell you the number of women who've been in touch with me, and men, about what knickers I should be wearing, how I should be handling that. And then literally we did an entire programme on, it was a year since the Taliban took over Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And you've got to be comfortable with making a jump from, as I set it up for myself, chafe, into what on earth is going on in Afghanistan and how as a country we're responding. So I do try where we can to have a very personal relationship.
That is why you're a speech broadcaster of the year. Because you can do that. As you said, there's lots of people in this room at different stages in their career, different ambitions. What would you say to people here in the audience or people who will be watching later online who want to follow in your footsteps and in your career?
I would say, especially if you're a presenter, if I could start there, never ever just be, as somebody said to me, a gob on a stick. You should provide ideas, you should bid for people, you should want the very best for the listener, and you should imagine you're listening at home and what you would want to be asked and to be said. You should be very much on their side. Radio works still because it's one-to-one and it's a heartbeat in people's lives, and I think that personal relationship is exceptionally important. If you are a producer, similarly, I think there's a lot going on, but if you know what you need to provide for your listener, that's an extremely good guide. And I think exclusives are underrated.
Emma Barnett, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
There's so much in that short session, isn't there? I think one of the points that I'll be thinking about is what she said about podcasts often being friendly and having conversations, and the difference between that and an interview, and perhaps how Emma approaches those interviews as a journalist. I thought that was an interesting distinction. And also the point about the challenge of our monoculture. So that tendency to all gather around the same thing, to look at what's trending, it is what we need to talk about, but also knowing that actually people want surprises as well, and how tricky it is to find different ways of doing that. And I think many people working on regular weekday shows will be familiar with this challenge. There are so many more conversations like this, equally brilliant, from previous Radio Academy festivals and events. There's a whole library's worth of resources about working in the radio and podcasting industry. So if you become a member, it'll all be there for you. Just go to the Radio Academy website. If you search for membership, you'll get all the details. Happy International Women's Day, and thank you for listening.